News.
Headlines: Iran's leader says the West will not hesitate to further extend its influence wherever it can, noting that the ongoing conflict in Ukraine stems from the West's attempt to expand NATO. Hamas condemns Israel's new settlement plans in Al-Quds and vows to stand up against the regime's expansion projects to protect the Islamic identity of the city. And French people are voting in the parliamentary elections that could prevent President Macron from pushing through his second-term agenda. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has blamed NATO expansionism for the war in Ukraine, saying Western powers will not hesitate to expand their sphere of influence wherever possible. In a meeting with the visiting Kazakh president, Ayatollah Seyed Ali Khamenei urged vigilance in the face of relentless U.S. attempts to undermine the sovereignty and might of countries, particularly in Eastern and Western Asia. The leader also pointed to the deep historical cultural ties between Iran and Kazakhstan and called for the greater expansion of cooperation between the two countries, in particular regionally. He said the two sides must redouble efforts to follow through and implement their agreements. For his part, Qasem Jomrat Tokayev hailed his talks with the Iranian president earlier in the day. He said that a document signed between the two sides can pave the ground for the enhancement of bilateral ties. The president of the Republic of Kazakhstan, Qasem Jomrat Tokayev, has paid a visit to Iran to cement ties with the Islamic Republic. Yusuf Jalali reports.
A warm welcome for a new chapter in the Iran-Kazakhstan relations. On Sunday, Kazakh President Qasem Jomart Tokayev arrived in Tehran at the invitation of his Iranian counterpart, Ebrahim Raisi. After an hour-long meeting, the two sides oversaw the signing of several cooperation documents on transport, energy, and tourism, among other areas.
Despite the existing geopolitical situation and restrictions, Kazakhstan and Iran managed to increase their bilateral trade by 50% over the past 3 months. With today's MOUs, I'm certain that we will achieve a lot more in our interactions.
Iran was the first country that recognized Kazakhstan's independence following the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1991. That was when Tehran and Nur Sultan began their diplomatic ties. President Raisi says the two nations have never been closer.
This visit by the honorable Kazakh president is undoubtedly a milestone in Iran-Kazakhstan relations. Over the past 30 years, we have maintained fraternal ties with our neighbor, Kazakhstan, but the level of our relations need to be enhanced.
Iran and Kazakhstan are both members of the Economic Cooperation Organization, ECO. This provides a safe trading channel for the two countries, without worries over the impacts of U.S. sanctions on Iran.
We need to expand our cooperation through regional organizations such as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and the Eurasian Economic Union.
Since he took office less than a year ago, President Raisi has been trying to establish closer neighborly ties, as he believes this would obviate the need for Iran to wait for the fate of the ailing 2015 deal with the world powers to improve its economy.
Before the coronavirus pandemic, Iran and Kazakhstan's annual trade exceeded $1 billion. But the pandemic pushed this figure down to around $200 million. Today, the two presidents vowed to push the envelope of their country's commercial interaction and set a $3 billion mark for their annual trade. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
To continue this discussion, we are joined by Mr. Daniel Kovalik, lecturer and author of The Plot to Attack Iran, who's joining us live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Kovalik, if you could please tell us what the significance of this visit is, and what ways is this important?
Well, I think this shows, it's another example of the growing multipolar world we're living in now. Countries like Iran have been targeted by the U.S. to be economically, politically, diplomatically isolated. But Iran has found a way to find friends, particularly in the East, in the former Soviet Union nations, and Russia and China as well. And I think, you know, this is one example of that, and how Iran will continue to, one, find a way to prosper despite the attempt of the West to isolate it, but also to gain influence in the region and in the world, really.
So, Mr. Kovalik, just as you mentioned, in a span of less than 15 days, we've had three presidents visiting Iran. And it seems that there is some kind of strong alliance with so many memorandums of understanding being signed between these countries. If you could please shed more light on the different aspects of these ties that Iran is forging with like-minded states.
Yeah, well, Iran has become a very crucial country around the world. My own personal experience has been, for example, in Venezuela, where Iran probably was the biggest help to Venezuela in overcoming U.S. sanctions, helping it with its oil industry, getting the oil industry back online. It is back online now, and Venezuela is expected to have something like 15% economic growth, and they can really thank Iran for that, you know. And now you have other countries like Nicaragua as well getting help from Iran. So they're really expanding their reach and influence well beyond Asia and the Middle East. And again, so we see Iran really as a world leader in many respects.
Thank you very much, Daniel Kovalik, lecturer and author of The Plot to Attack Iran from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, says it will stand up against Israel's settlement expansion to protect the Islamic identity of Al-Quds. Hamas issued a statement condemning the regime's new settlement plans in Al-Quds neighborhoods. The resistance movement says the settlement construction takes place in sync with Israel's grand scheme of altering the historic identity of Al-Quds and ramping down the presence of Palestinians there. Hamas called on all Palestinians to resist the Zionist plot for the Holy Land with everything they have. In recent years, Israel has been speeding up settlement constructions in Al-Quds. Most Arab countries have kept silent in the face of Israel's land grab trend. For more on that, we're joined by Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent, who's joining us live from Gaza City. Ashraf, tell us more about this trend from the Israeli regime.
Yes, Gisu, the fact that the Israeli regime and the settlers continue to confiscate Palestinian lands and occupy Al-Quds is another example of Israel's callous disregard to international law and the lives of Palestinians, especially in Al-Quds. Hamas resistance movement condemned issued a strong condemnation message regarding this Israeli land grab of Palestinian lands in Al-Quds, and called on all Palestinians and all Palestinian factions to resist this land grab policy with all forms of resistance. The fact that the Israeli regime continues to confiscate Palestinian land and build illegal settlements, whether in Al-Quds or on the occupied West Bank, will make it extremely difficult for Palestinians in the future to establish their independent state with Al-Quds as its capital. For decades, the Israeli regime has tried to erase the Islamic identity of Al-Quds and continues to desecrate the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound and also the Islamic and Christian holy sites in the holy city. Such actions throughout the year have caused intifadas or uprising against the Israeli regime, like the one in the year 2000 when former Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon entered Al-Aqsa compound, sparking the Al-Aqsa Intifada. And many believe that more intifadas will happen and more possibly military confrontations will happen because of this ongoing Israeli aggression against Palestinians, especially in Al-Quds.
Thank you very much. That was our correspondent, Eshef Shannon, joining us live from Gaza City. And a report by Israeli media has confirmed the regime's direct responsibility for the massacre in the Sabra and Shatliya refugee camps in southern Lebanon in 1982. Based on confidential documents, the report says that the plan to raid the Palestinian refugee camps in Beirut had been approved by Israel's then prime minister. It says Israeli commanders had held meetings with the leaders of Lebanon's Al-Kata'ib militia group to coordinate the slaughter of civilians. And 2 days after the massacre, Israeli officials held a meeting with the militia leaders to discuss ways to conceal Israel's involvement. Israeli officials have always denied the regime's responsibility in the savagery. According to some estimates, up to 3,500 civilians were killed when Lebanese militia stormed the camps. The vicious episode followed Israel's ill-conceived invasion of southern Lebanon. Yemenis are still suffering from the consequences of the Saudi-led war, despite the UN truce entering its third month. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdulatif Al-Washali, has more.
Amid a decline in military operations since the UN ceasefire took effect in April, the number of victims of banned weapons in Yemen keeps rising. Remnants of Saudi cluster bombs are taking more lives as Riyadh refuses to allow badly needed equipment, including mine detectors, to enter the war-torn country. Yemen's Mine Action Center reported 120 cases since the start of the truce, 26 of them in the first third of June.
Since the beginning of this year, 326 people have fallen victim to leftover cluster bombs. 120 of them alone have been killed since the start of the truce. The bombings of the Saudi-led coalition continue to claim the lives of innocent citizens on a daily basis. Unfortunately, the Saudi-led coalition has been preventing the entry of necessary equipment for years, even though our work is for humanitarian purposes. Therefore, we believe that the coalition seeks to kill civilians even after the end of the war.
The Mine Action Center says the Saudi-led coalition has prevented the entry of mine detectors to Sana'a since 2018 for no good reason, and field teams are still working despite all the risks.
The biggest problem that the center faces is the lack of mine detectors and field equipment. We have been facing this problem since the outset, and unfortunately, the devices and personal protection equipment were not provided even throughout the years of war. In 2018, the United Nations informed us that our equipment had arrived in Djibouti. But much to our surprise, part of it was held by the Saudi-led coalition and some was handed over to other parties not affiliated with us. And we have not received anything until this moment.
During the seven-year war, the Saudi-led coalition has used 15 types of internationally prohibited cluster bombs in its attacks against residential areas across Yemen. However, officials say relevant international organizations refrain from cooperating for political reasons. People here are dying due to the remnants of internationally banned weapons used by the Saudi-led coalition. Experts believe the number of victims will continue to rise unless the coalition allows the needed equipment to defuse the weapons that kill Yemeni women and the children to enter Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
French people are heading back to the polls for a second round voting in high-stakes parliamentary elections. More than 48 million voters are registered to cast their ballots The results are due after the polls close at 8 p.m. Paris time. President Emmanuel Macron is expected to win the biggest share of National Assembly seats. Still, he is in danger of falling short of a parliamentary majority, complicating efforts to push through his policy agenda. The first round saw his centrist camp tied up with a left-wing coalition led by Jean-Luc Mélenchon. Those polls were overshadowed by a historic low turnout, with over 52% of the registered voters choosing to stay away from the polls. The legislative polls come hot on the heels of April's presidential vote, which saw Macron re-elected following a runoff victory over the far-right candidate Marine Le Pen. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Paris, Romain Mazahari. He updated us on the ongoing second round of parliamentary elections in France.
It should be around 45% turnout. So you've got more than half of the French electorate, which is not planning to participate in the vote for the legislative body. This is why we rebelled against monarchy, was to get a legislative body. But the French just don't seem to care at this point. And it really says a lot about the credibility of the Western liberal democratic project. But it really goes even more than that, because when you figure on turnout being around 45%, Macron is probably going to get an absolute majority, but only win about 12, maybe 15% of the actual electorate. So with only 12 to 15% of the actual electorate, he's going to be able to force through far-right economic austerity measures for the next 5 years. In the first round, Macron was tied with the left-wing alliance. That's factually true, but it's a bit misleading because that's overall votes. That's not in terms of the 577 seats. They are not going to be split 50-50. Macron is likely he will be right around 289, which is 289 seats, which is what he needs for an absolute majority.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural News. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
About a dozen penguins have been returned home after being given a second chance at life following their rehab in Argentina. The birds were rescued in the province of Buenos Aires and were transported to the Mundo Marino Foundation for evaluation. The Magellanic penguins were treated for malnutrition, dehydration and parasites. The foundation's director says these pathologies are usually caused by climate change, food scarcity and environmental pollution. Vets say they are seeing more and more of these sorts of rescues. The bears were nursed back to health in one of the foundation's facilities in the town of San Clemente del Tuyo. They were later released back to their habitat in southern Chile. People in Poland have rolled out flower carpets for the feast of Corpus Christi held in the central village of Spiszemierz. Families usually arrange colorful and symbolic carpets for the procession on the road section in front of their homes. They use flowers picked from the surrounding fields or their own gardens. They also use soil, sand and fresh cut grass. The procession begins from the church and roams the streets of the village. The flower carpets have been rolled out annually since the tradition started 200 years ago, except for once when a storm broke out.
This tradition is 200 years old, and according to what the village elders say, it has only happened once that there was no carpet of flowers for the procession, because a storm broke out and swept everything away in the afternoon.
Families begin collecting the flowers a few days before the feast and arrange it on the celebration day. Besides its religious aspect, the event is also meant to express appreciation for nature. The practice has been passed from generation to generation ever since it began. The tradition was registered at UNESCO's cultural heritage list last year.
Artists have turned a historic village in the Tunisian island of Djerba into a vibrant open-air art museum. The organizer of the project says he has always had a clear vision for the gallery.
The goal of this project is to create a new way of displaying urban art, to create a museum, a real museum, which labels for the works with a certain lighting, certain works and staging. Also to create a dynamic to give this museum to the residents so that they could appropriate it and it almost becomes their business.
The project is called Djerbehud and it's located in a town of Eriyadh. Since 2014, about 150 artists from 35 different nations have gathered there to produce eye-catching street art. Tourists say they enjoy visiting the gallery because they can see something new every time they come round. Residents of the town are also content with the vibrant looks of their streets, saying the artwork give a little movement to their everyday lives. Japanese engineers have invented a four-legged robot that can easily move across rough terrain while carrying heavy loads. Japan's Kawasaki Heavy Industries has developed a quadrupled robot, believing it can help with labor shortage in the country's aging society. Dubbed Bex after the wild goat species Ibex, the robot features large curved horns. It can walk over rough terrain or move faster on smoother surfaces using wheels tucked in its underbelly. Bex was designed to perform tasks and carry humans in agricultural settings, thereby answering a labor crunch in rural Japan.
young and rare Bonelli's eagles born on a breeding farm in France are taking a journey to Spain, where they will be released into the wild. These eaglets were born in captivity, which is a rare feat for this endangered species. Three of the five are ready to be released and have been fitted with GPS microchips for tracking purposes. Their initial release date was delayed because of several weeks of bird flu, which made traveling impossible. The other two eagles are too young to be reintroduced and are still being hand-fed from behind the curtain. They will make the journey sometime in July. The breeders, however, are worried about how to sustain the program as their birds begin to age.
The Bonelli's eagle is a species that is relatively scarce. In France, we must have about 40 couples, something like that, who produce about 20 chicks per year. Here we have 5 chicks, but my birds are very old. Still, 5 chicks is not nothing for a species which relies on a small reproduction number.
Pacto also says his 5 pairs of eagles are aged between 18 and 30 years, and 3 of them are now too old to breed. He says the number of Bonelli's eagles had dropped dramatically since the 1980s, mainly to electrocution on high-voltage lines. Due to the reintroduction program, the population of these eagles has nearly doubled over the past 2 decades.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Another breakthrough in the world of science. Japanese scientists move one step closer to creating lifelike robots by changing their physical appearance. Researchers at the University of Tokyo have developed living skin on a robotic finger. To that aim, they have submerged the robot's finger into a cylinder filled with a mixture of the natural skin components. The lab-grown skin is water-repellent, has wrinkles, and can heal itself. A member of the research team explains how the innovation will be helpful in the future. Let's take a listen.
As for challenges in the future, since we've only produced a simple skin, we would like to add various sensory organs such as the nervous system and the vascular system. We would like to further improve the function of the skin. Once we complete that, I believe that the skin itself could be used for transplantation, or use the skin as a model to develop cosmetics or drugs, or for leather products that do not require harming the animal, or to cover prosthetic limbs and legs.
The lab-grown skin is much weaker than the natural type. It's unable to survive long without nutrient supply and waste removal. For now, the team plans to address those issues and also include more sophisticated features. They want to add hair follicles, sweat glands, and sensory neurons to the skin. A Belgian company is trying to combat urban waste by transforming used coffee grounds into edible mushrooms that can also be used in construction. The mycelium is grown in a damp cellar in Brussels. Some 5 tons of coffee grounds are collected each month from partner cafes. They are then mixed in drums where the oyster mushroom spores are added and mixed with straw in a sack. The mushrooms emerge from slashes in the sacks 15 days afterwards and are ready to be sent to shops for sales. The business owners say they are looking to expand their business and use coffee and mushrooms as an environmentally friendly alternative to plastic.
Each day we throw away a lot of coffee, and this coffee to be produced needs a lot of energy from the cultivation to the transportation to Europe, and it's just a pity not to use it more than a few minutes to drink a coffee.
The company has already tested out its fungus-based insulating tiles and received its first order of these tiles for soundproofing purposes. Jacket says they hope to produce 12 tons of the mycelium material per month when they gather enough investment. The business owner says there is no shortage of raw material as coffee is widely consumed in Belgium. Jacket says the innovation can dramatically cut down on plastic waste.
China launches three astronauts to its Tiangong space station as its construction enters a critical phase. The three blasted off from a launch center in northwestern China. They are the second group of astronauts to head to the space station since its construction began in April 2021. They will stay there for 6 months. The space station is planned as a three-section structure. The core module was launched in April, and two more components will be sent into space in July and September. The new mission will oversee the integration of the three parts. The crew's commander has described the task as a pivotal battle in the construction of Tiangong, which is planned to be completed by the end of 2022.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there are really many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warned that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication, and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
Ya man bada'a khalqi wa dhikri wa tarbiyati wa birri wa taghdiyati habni libtida'i karamek wa sanifi birrike bi ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi أتراك معذبي بنارك بعد توحيدك وبعد من طوى علي قلبي من معرفتك ولهج به لساني من ذكرك واعتقده ضميري من حبك وبعد صدق اعترافي
Brothers and sisters, this part of the Divine Kumail supplication was under discussion. Ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi. O Allah, O my Master, O my Lord. Aturaka mu'adhibi binarika ba'da tawhidik. Can you be seen tormenting me with fire after I have professed to your unity and oneness? وَبَعْدَ مَنْ طَوَى عَلَيْهِ قَلْبِي مِنْ مَعْرِفَتِكَ And after your cognition my heart has embraced. وَلَهِجَ بِهِ لِسَانِي مِنْ ذِكْرِكَ And the remembrance of you my tongue has constantly mentioned. وَعْتَقَدَهُ ضَمِيرِي مِنْ حُبِّكَ And the love of you to which my mind has clung. وَبَعْدَ صِدْقِ اعْتِرَافِي وَدُعَائِي خَاضِعًا لِرُبُوبِيَّتِكَ And after the sincerity of my confession and my supplication, the humble before your lordship. In this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam is saying that the Almighty Allah, as being known by the prophets, by the imams, by the pious ones and the repentant servants, will not torment such a person with his fire. After the awareness of the servant about these facts, about Almighty Allah's mercy. Now, let us discuss the first concept about this excerpt of the Kumail supplication, which is oneness and unity. So, in the first part, the supplicant says, أَتُرَاكَ مُعَذِّبِ بِنَارِكَ بَعْدَ تَوْحِيدِكَ Can you be seen tormenting me with your fire? After I have professed to your oneness. The human beings have all known the holy essence of Allah and His divine attributes from the Holy Quran, from the traditions, from pondering in the creation of the world and its beings, which practically and mentally teach us that there is one creator and there cannot be another creator other than Him. He is infinite, and He is truly the absolute cause. And in this part of the supplication, the supplicant is testifying to Allah's oneness verbally and also wholeheartedly. The supplicant is denying the living idols. And such a person is called the one who believes in monotheism, the one who is muwahhid. Or monotheist. The divine religions of all great prophets were based on the same oneness and this monotheism about the Almighty Allah. They have all invited people to confirm that there is only one Allah that you need to believe in. And as the Holy Quran implies, the prophets invited the people to practical monotheism, which is denying earthly deities.
Oh my God, my Master, my Lord, and my Nourisher, will you see me punished with the fire kindled by you, despite my belief in your unity, and despite the fact that my heart has been filled with knowledge of you, and when my tongue has repeatedly praised you? and my conscience has acknowledged your love. And despite my sincere confessions and my humble begging submissively made to your divinity, no, indeed you are far too kind and generous to destroy one you nourished and supported, or to drive away from yourself one you have kept under your protection.
Thank you, Allah,
God, let me hear,
feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. Feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So we were discussing this part of the Kumayyah supplication about monotheism. Ya ilahi wa sayyidi wa rabbi, aturaka mu'adhibi binarika ba'da tawhidik. My master, my Allah, my Lord, can you be seen tormenting me with your fire after I have believed in your oneness and monotheism? We said that monotheism is the base of all invitations of the prophets and imams to religion. But the theoretical concept of monotheism is also important in purifying the minds of all the nations from disbelief. For example, the disbelievers who have considered other deities beside Allah, they are addressed. Those who believe in the sources of goodness and badness separately, those who believe in materialization of Allah and other things, those who believe in the gods, those who have considered Allah as compounds, such as Christians, and also the followers of Mujassima, who have personified Allah, the most ignorant of which are the followers of Wahhabiyya, they are all dealt with. In the practical aspect of monotheism, worshipping the one Allah and avoiding the obedience of things other than Him are stressed. Worshipping the one Allah results from a true mind and complete knowledge of Allah, and polytheism is a consequence of mental polytheism and wrong belief. In fact, avoidance of worshipping beings other than Allah is avoidance of cheap opinions that cause this kind of worship. And it is practically impossible to live in such a world, to live among the blessings of the Almighty Allah, our surroundings replete with the signs of the Almighty Allah. The Holy Quran says, سَنُرِيهِمْ آيَاتِنَا فِي الْآفَاقِ وَفِي أَنفُسِهِمْ حَتَّى يَتَبَيَّنَ لَهُمْ أَنَّهُ الْحَقِّ. It seems impossible to believe in other than the Almighty Allah. Of course, except for the ones who are in adversity with religion and Almighty Allah. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
I need you by my side. I wish to be close to you through all my life. Ya Allah, oh Allah, be with me all the way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
In Britain, almost two-thirds of tenants over the age of 65 have cut back on their general spending as a result of the cost of living crisis, and campaigners are warning that older people who do not own their homes are particularly vulnerable to rising fuel bills. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Hilary Osborne. The piece is titled, Older UK Renters Forced to Cut Back on Spending as Living Costs Soar. In Britain, almost two-thirds of tenants over the age of 65 have cut back on their general spending as a result of the cost of living crisis, and campaigners are warning that older people who do not own their homes are particularly vulnerable to rising electricity and fuel bills. Research shared with Guardian Money by the charity Independent Age puts the spotlight on the struggles of older tenants who are battling to keep up with rising household costs. Its survey found that 62% of renters over the age of 65 were having to cut back on their general spending, and that they were more likely to be doing so than their contemporaries who were homeowners. A quarter said they would not be able to afford a £10 a month increase in their living costs, while 71% said they would not be able to cover a £50 rise. More than half said they felt anxious about their finances. The state's pension increased by 3.1% last month, well below the 7% inflation rate recorded in March. Energy bills went up at the same time, and with a further increase likely this October, economists have predicted inflation could go above 10% before the end of the year. Older private renters are particularly vulnerable to soaring inflation, particularly where rents have been rising too, says Dan Wilson-Craw, the deputy director of the campaign group Generation Rent. Unlike homeowners who are likely to have paid off their mortgage, they still have housing costs. If landlords want to raise the rent to reflect the wider market, there is little current tenants can do. For retirees on fixed incomes, this cuts their disposable income or forces them to move. Independent Age's survey of 2,000 adults in England over the age of 65, of whom 391 were renting, found that 57% of tenants were cutting back on heating. 42% said they had reduced how much food and drink they were buying. And 29% were buying less vehicle fuel. Aside from those most essential purchases, 46% said that they had cut back on clothing and on footwear purchase, and 39% had reduced their social activities. Separate figures from Shelter show that between the financial years of 2020-2021 and 2021-2022, there was a 20% increase in the number of over-65s contacting its helpline who were at risk of homelessness. Francisca, a 64-year-old, and her husband Colin, a 70-year-old, say their rent has risen by more than 7% this year. They are struggling to cover it and the other bills they face, despite making cutbacks. When we go to the supermarket, we are buying the cheapest of the cheap, she says. We're taking fewer baths, fewer showers. We turn the lights off, even on cold days. We turned the heating off. Although the couple chose to rent because, says Francisca, we're not sure what the future holds, she says it has left them vulnerable. They have lived in poor housing in the past while paying a high rent. were evicted through a Section 21 no-fault eviction by one previous landlord and have also had problems with letting agencies. This has made them very nervous about what happens when their contract ends next March. Their age has financial implications. At our stage of life, we have a pot of money, and if we live a long life, we have to stretch it over that time, she says. We can't go to work 9 to 5 or get new careers, so we rely on freelancing. Morgan Vine, the Independent Age Head of Policy, says older renters are left in increasingly precarious financial situations and need help and protection from the government. Our research found that older renters are one of the most at-risk groups of dropping into poverty past state pension age and are more likely to experience long-term poverty, she says. Day-to-day, we also know older renters are at an increased risk of living in poor quality homes and face higher costs and greater financial insecurity than other groups as a result. Morgan Vine says older renters have shared concerns with the charity about high rents and that their landlords could sell up at any time. With the cost of living crisis squeezing people's budgets from every angle, these worries are only going to get worse, she says. Renters make up the minority of households in England, with a head aged 65 or over, according to the latest official figures. The latest data shows there are 5.5 million owner-occupiers in this age range and 5.1 million own their home outright, which means no monthly mortgage costs. There are only 382,000 households in the private sector headed by an older person and 1 million in the social rented sector. Housing associations are allowed to put up rents by 4.1% in April, and many tenants who rent from them have seen increases. In the private rented sector, it is not easy to see what is happening to existing tenancies, but newly advertised contracts are typically costing more than a year ago. Polly Neat, the chief executive of Shelter, says older tenants are likely to be on low incomes, which would mean pressure from rising costs. With bills skyrocketing and private rents the highest on record, it's no wonder our emergency helpline is picking up the phone to older renters who, instead of preparing for retirement, are facing homelessness. No one should be forced to choose between eating or paying their rent, she says. Wilson Crawl says, the state pension has risen by less than inflation, but it's worse for private renters relying on housing benefit, which has been frozen since 2020. If these people are paying higher rents, that money could be coming out of the rest of their income, and that's before we even think about rising energy prices. Wilson Crow adds, we need a freeze on rents and another suspension of evictions to protect tenants during this crisis.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.